This is GamesAtWork.biz, your weekly podcast about gaming, technology, and play. Your hosts are Michael Martin, Andy Piper, and Michael Rowe. The thoughts and opinions on this podcast are those of the hosts and guests alone and are not the opinions of any organization which they have been, are, or may be affiliated with. This is episode 359. Speak, friend, and enter. Good morning, good evening, good afternoon. Michael Rowe here on a GamesAtWork.biz Friday afternoon, getting ready to have fun and excitement and a good time talking about tech with my friends and co-hosts. Andy Piper, how are you?
Hi, Michael. Yes, I'm well, thank you. I've just rounded off a busy week, really busy week. I'm taking a few days off at the start of next week, and I've got lots happening. I had a really good conversation on Wednesday morning, early morning, my time, with some folks down in Australia. I say down in, I mean, I'm whether is it up or down, I never know, over in Australia, just with the time zone stuff. But had some interesting fun with different software and electronics communities that I'm getting involved with right now. So, yes, I'm doing well. I'm looking forward to talking about the list of links we've got this week. Mr. Martin, how are you, sir?
Fabulous, Andy. Hello, Michael. I'm glad to be here too. And you're right. We've got some really interesting links to kind of get us rocking and rolling today. A lot of things meta as we kind of looked in the show notes for today.
That's because we look at the large collection of everything, the meta everything, you know, the things about things about things.
But now that Meta owns the metaverse and we talk about the metaverse, does that mean Meta owns us?
No, but if they want to buy us out, you know, I've got an 8-figure number in mind. They can, you know, drop us a note.
Okay. Yep. And plus there's content, right? You know, so we have a couple of years of content here too that might be, you know, worth at least for goodwill, right?
Just imagine the social graph of our listeners.
Yeah, exactly.
The value in that alone.
Yeah, and the insight and all the things that you could do with it. Well, so Meta apparently has now something called a builder bot. And
yes.
The article out of Fast Company talks about BuilderBot, and this uses AI voice command prototypes to create environments in Meta's metaverse via the MetaQuest meta-meta-ing. And the first thing that kind of grabbed me when I saw this and read a little bit about it was, okay, we're kind of right back again to Mr. Mumbles. Where, yes, you can create things, or create my park over here now, or you can use your voice as opposed to other controls to embed new objects in the metaverse. And maybe that's a better way to work with things because it's a little hard to use pointing devices and other user interface experiences within the metaverse as it exists in Meta's platform today. But it just struck me as, okay, that's interesting. You could use Google, you could use Siri, you could use any of these other voice commands. Big deal.
You know, I can imagine, and I did watch a little bit of the video, the precision has to be lacking, right? Because in natural conversational speech, you're not going to say, hey, you know, put a picnic blanket over there. And by there, I mean at grid coordinate 6.4/2.3/1.8.
Yeah, XYZ, and baby.
Rotate it by 33%. You know, It's, you know, good for a demo, nice big, you know, big grand gestures, you know. And the pointing makes sense because you do have a pointing device, so you can say over there.
I haven't watched the demo. I've just, a quick plug for an app I'm using right now. There's an app called Play, which is a very generic name, but it's an Apple app, so it works on Mac and iOS. If you want to save YouTube videos to playlists, you basically can add them in there and manage your playlist through that, and it syncs between all your devices because the YouTube Watch Later queue is unmanageable, has no API, and you can't easily do anything with it. So anyway, I've been using that. I've just added that link to my Play to catch up later. But getting back to the point, I haven't watched that video, but what I'm thinking about as I read about it is sort of the notion of the Star Trek holodeck, right? That you're able to say, hey, computer, give me this scene. Adjust that by 12 degrees. And there's a level of intelligence in the AI, the, you know, omniscient or at least all observing computer that it enables it to work with us that easily. It also brought back to mind, once I went to Star Trek, my talk about 15 years ago I gave at an event when I was at IBM, I went to talk to a conference about the future, and it was about partly about sort of the IBM five innovations in 5 years that they come out with every now and then, or they were doing.
Right.
And I remember starting off.
It's called the Global Technology Output.
Outlook.
Right, GTO. That's right. Yes, indeed. Thank you for reminding me of the terminology. But the I remember in my talk talking about the notion of the tricorder as this kind of, you know, it starting off being this kind of very chunky thing in the 60s and then becoming this kind of pad in the 90s show with very with sort of 2Ds. Very thin. Yes, indeed, with 2Ds. And then around that time, the iPad itself came out in the real world. And, you know, how Star Trek influences thinking and technology and people's, you know, imagination of what things might be like can lead to some of these things. So I'm really curious. I'm curious to know as well when I can get access to this as a Quest owner.
Oculus Quest,
I'm curious. One thing I shared with both of you, but we didn't have in our show notes this week, I'll very quickly hit on, was that apparently there's a Quest or oriented version of Minecraft that somebody's built called, I think it's called Questcraft, but in order to use it, I'd have to sideload it. And I haven't gone down the road of sideloading stuff onto my headset so far. So I'm curious about this and when I'll be able to try it out, because we've done this kind of thing in Second Life again 15 years ago. Obviously, it was point and click. At the moment, this would be more sort of gesture and you know, and use the, your control paddles. But I'm really curious to see how well this develops, because I think these kind of things, if you look to the Star Trek future, may well be what we want or envisage in the future, but I don't see it, as Michael Rowe, you just said, at the moment, the amount of precision that you might need to modify those kind of models is going to be very pernickety, right?
So when do you think we will reset our Star Trek future to some other interesting sci-fi show? So Star Trek is 1960s, right?
Well,
and maybe you can do 80s, late 80s, mid to late 80s. When are we going to reset it to like movies and TV shows from the aughts?
Same.
And actually jump ahead again?
Well, no time soon, because I heard that the Babylon 5 reboot has been put on.
Yes,
on almost
for a whole year, another year delay.
Least, so
it's a 1 year delay.
I do like the holodeck example, Andy, and that makes me think about this in a slightly different way. And I'm sure that Michael, with your commentary earlier, that AI will get sufficiently intelligent to be able to know more about what it is that you intend. And as you get to train your AI, you know, put the picnic blanket over there is going to, you know, be shortcut for exactly where you wanted it to be. So it will be more and more holodecky. Holodeckyian, maybe? I don't know. Well, as we get to the future.
Well, I think that on the flip side of that, I love looking forward and thinking about those kind of things. But our next story is about a fashion show in the metaverse, Metaverse Fashion Week, and that's going to be hosted by Decentraland. And what this really, really reminded me of was Second Life again. I know that I always go back to that, but this really reminded me of, you know, the kinds of things. In fact, I wouldn't be surprised if there was a fashion week in Second Life at some point with real world brands at some point. I don't remember now specifically, but there must have been.
I know there was. I remember it, and I remember actually, you know, the thing that was really struggling in Second Life was, and hopefully we've gotten better at this, was fabric. And how it lays and how it moves and everything else and the amount of compute power it took and the algorithms that weren't good enough yet to really have a Fashion Week represent realistically what the article of clothing might look like, right? So
the prim problem.
Like, here we go again, another Fashion Week, the prim problem.
Yeah, they were. Yes, I remember when I jumped back in a few years ago, there were people making fun of my avatar because I hadn't upgraded to, you know, the much richer, but they still were very primitive compared to what you see in, you know, a console or current PC game in terms of, you know, the way that things flow, because, you know, of the fact that you could model anything and that had to flow in a natural way. It was interesting. I like this article as well. And there's a link lower down where it talks about to another article which talks about the more general concept of our metaverse fashion shows the next big thing, and talks about Roblox and concerts and the fact that I think it was Tommy, the brand, fashion brand, had built a show in an Animal Crossing last year, I think. So
right.
I think it's really interesting to see how the brands want to jump into these sort of seen as hot, popular, cutting edge, leading edge spaces to show that they're there.
They're just hip and cool.
Well, the hip and cool aspect was what kind of also drove me here too, and especially around the digital goods, right? So we've been talking about that concept as it relates to and fashion, because we've had that before as well, the opportunity to buy digital goods and then to trade them, to save them, to do something with them. So this lends itself nicely into the NFT space again, so that you could do something interesting here, as opposed to I own a picture of a particular ape or something like that. It could be more complicated, Michael, you know, to your point about it is a dynamic object. And then because it is fashion, it is something that is something that people want to buy and wear more and more often. So if you have an avatar in the 3D internet space, you might well want to have things that are hip and happening and that are appropriate for the places that you are frequenting. If you're in a gaming space, that might be a different presence that you would want to have versus if you are in more of a business setting or something else. So to me, this was really pretty cool. And the fact that it attracted our attention before it actually happened, you know, now allows us to say, hey, can we, you know, observe this a little bit more and kind of see what goes on in the Fashion Week starting on the 24th of March. So we'll see. Maybe.
Yeah, so I'm going to have to just put it on my calendar.
Yeah. Right?
Block some time.
So
go see if I can get in.
Yeah, and I bet you have time
rope
on your calendar in March.
Right.
This relates nicely, incidentally, to the next article that we have here, Michael. I think it's from you, which is also in a little NFT land here, except it's with Steve and the Lake.
Yeah, this was really cool. Colbert's Late Show has done donations before for a group called Donors Choose in order to provide funding for schools and school projects and things of that nature. And I think it was on Monday or end of last week, he actually partnered with a group to create a he did an NFT explainer some time back, right? Mm-hmm. So what is NFTs? And he decided that he was going to create an AFT. So he took his explainer and he wrote it down on a paper bag. Okay? An AFT is an actual effing thing instead of a non-functional.
Amazing.
Right? I love it. The AFT. And so he did that. And so this group... Terra Virtua has decided to offer NFTs
of his
of
AFT.
The AFT for donations that will then be used to fund Donors Choose. And I thought it was kind of cool. I went to go do it. I was going to do it in the name of our podcast. And it got to the point where it's like, okay, now set up an account, attach it to your crypto wallet, connecting it to Ethereum, blah, blah, blah. And I was like, okay, nope, sorry. I don't have an Ethereum crypto wallet. I don't want to buy into one just so that I can, you know, donate, I think it was $10 or something for this. I'm sure there was somewhere deep down in the site I could have tagged it to a credit card.
But maybe
but I just thought this was actually funny and a good idea and a great thing where they were minting 1,000 of them. Or 10,000 of them. So you would have one of 10,000. So it's a numbered item, not just one. And it would be a donation. And I thought that was kind of a good use of an NFT. And I thought it would be kind of good to tag into our show, too.
Well, maybe one of our listeners will want to go, who use Ethereum and are into NFTs, will want to go support the charity through terravirtua.io.
/Colbert.
Yeah, so
thank you for that addition.
I've taken a look at one of the purchased versions of this already as well, and it is available for sale again. And there's an auction; it's up for bid. So it was bought for $10. It's currently owned, according to the trading history, this particular one by owner called Parabolics, who's owned it since the 22nd. And if we were to buy it right now, there's a buy now button for $10,000. So, you know, that'd be a pretty good mark, you know, pretty good earning opportunity right there, wouldn't it? You know, bought it for 10.
Well, the question is how much of that then goes back to the donation? Or is it a one-time only to the donation? Because it depends on the contract that's set up with the NFT.
It does, right? Because the bidding on this one starts at $100. So I don't know if this is now every time this NFT sells that there's a part of it that gets scraped off and put towards the charity, which is an interesting mechanism if you think about it, that is allowing, almost a... an ability for you to fund a charity for a long time by starting with one NFT that continues to be handled on this Terra Virtua environment, if that's the way it works. Yeah. I don't know.
So very cool. I thought it was a great thing. And I love the term AFT. I think AFTs, there's some value in AFTs.
There probably is. Well, moving along, we've got a link in from Mr. Ian. He's like one for games of work, .biz, free to play to earn. There's a new game that's coming.
That's called
out.
Work.
Oh, it is, isn't it? It's a job, right?
Yep.
I mean, you know, I've never been a big fan of farming, right? But here in hyperspace, you can farm or grind or you know, do what you need to do to. Increase your in-game currency, and apparently you can do more than just do that. If you are earning enough currency, I suppose you can get money out and then go buy all the AFTs you want. So carbon-based life forms into the galaxy with an MMO called Hyperspace.
And looking at the MMO, it does look like one I would like. it's got,
well, you like crafting.
I'm okay with crafting. Yeah. I was trying to find the game that I'm currently futzing around with, and I'll put that in our show notes on Apple Arcade called Wildflowers, which is a little RPG crafting game, kind of fun. So check it out.
I just think they the splash image for Hyperspace and the game here, the carbon-based lifeform stuff. Reminds me of the DMA from Discovery Series Season 4, which I've been catching up on because I'm a few episodes behind. Just the strange gravitational thing that's going on in space there.
We've been watching that season, and sounds like I'm a couple episodes ahead of you.
Probably.
I won't say how many I think.
No,
because that
spoilers.
Might give things away.
No, don't. speaking of spoilers, apparently, according to the United States Copyright Office, there's been another decision upholding a previous decision too, that works of art that have been created by artificial intelligence systems are not to be granted copyright. So this struck me as kind of an interesting thing. Because copyright requires the creativity of a human mind. So it made me wonder, could there be an augmented version where the creation is then touched up a bit by a human, and now you have copyright there?
Well, I think what's interesting here, because this is the same guy, I believe, who tried to do some patents from AI, mm-hmm, right? Mm-hmm. And at the time, I think the decision was made that the patent could only be valid to the developers of the AI, not the AI itself. So it was like a pass-through patent.
Ah, interesting.
And so in this case, with the art being copyrighted, I would assume it would be the same path that the person who wrote the AI that created the art could get the patent, or the copyright. And he's really trying to force the issue to get the legal system defined, so you know what can and cannot be patented, and put the precedent in place so that you can't just. And we've talked about this before. Accelerando is the book, right? Yep. Where they use an AI to patent everything. They figure out all missing patents and have it go generate them, yep. And everything's patented, and then you're locked in, right? So I actually think this is an interesting story. I do think you can create unique works of art with AI, right?
You absolutely can.
And so a unique item is something that can be copyrighted or can be patented. It's just who holds it. And that's I think, what's going to be worked out through these types of stories and cases.
You probably could create NFTs.
And AFTs.
And AFTs. But you know, here's another interesting wrinkle, and none of us are attorneys, right? But, you know, bear with me for a second. There are artificial intelligence agents that write news stories. And those news stories are then carried by distribution networks. And there's usually something of a copyright on those. So I kind of wonder how that might now apply, that if there was an AI that kind of looked at the news and put together an AI-generated story on the news, how that works. Because if it's not copyrightable, in theory, anybody could take the exact news story and then claim it as they might. Which is kind of against the news model, right? Whoever's reporting the news, it's theirs. So it's interesting.
Yeah. Is it theirs or is the story theirs? The news is the news.
You know what I was saying, right?
Yeah. But I do find it really interesting with the path that is going down. And there have been multiple apps and services that have been created over the last 15 years to figure out and create like your own newspaper, right? I mean, or your own feed of news stories that are relevant to you. And then they have ones that turn those into audio, right? Or turn it into some kind of consumable feed for you. And think of the news feed that on Twitter, on Facebook, you know, on any of the social medias. That feed is a curated list. It just happens to be AI curated, right?
Right.
Or algorithm curated, I should say. Not all algorithms are AI.
But apparently not copyrightable.
Yeah, the feed isn't, but I bet you the code is.
Sure, because that was created. Well, was it created by human hands? You kind of start getting into turtles all the way down again before. So our last story, you know, speaking of audio here too, is one that I am eager to share with the two of you, because I'm kind of curious about your sense on this. And this article is talking about voice notes and whether voice notes are killing the phone call. Now, on our Apple devices and on other devices and laptops and so on and so forth, there's a way through many platforms, Slack, etc., to send someone a brief audio snippet of sorts. And I have to say that I've used this so infrequently, it's got to be less than 10 times ever for me personally. But apparently, there are at least some that find this method of communication, asynchronous voice communication, two-way asynchronous voice communication. Here, you as the listener are listening to us doing this podcast. It's a little tricky to come back to us with your voice, right? We can. There's multiple channels, and we encourage that, of course. But Andy, if I were to drop you a little voice message and then you were to drop me a voice message back.
Would we be thinking about the friction there is huge. Would we be flirting at that point? I don't know. I mean, it's interesting.
I don't know, right?
No, like you, I've not heavily used this feature. Reading the story, the article in The Guardian here in this link, there's a few interesting nuances that I hadn't really considered. I can definitely understand it starts off with a flirting situation or something that might end up in that scenario. I can see that in that context, it's quite useful or quite interesting or quite a different way of doing things than just sort of texting back and forth. I also think that it's really interesting to see the conversation about, you know, cancelling an appointment or something else that may have a legitimate reason that you need to express some emotion in or have some, you know, different, again, vocal nuance. It was something that's tricky that you want to discuss rather than just sort of typing it as a plain text sentence that could be misconstrued. I think that's really interesting use case for this technology. The same reason that you often would choose to have a face-to-face meeting to go through something difficult than try to do that via email, for example. Or you may have the opposite approach and response. You know, you may prefer to, you know, curtail something. Yeah, and Michael just put his hands up to the screen in a sort of very hands-off, let's be done with this, quick email and we're finished way. So I think, I hadn't really, honestly, it's bizarre. I hadn't thought about that at all in terms of how these people use these.
Weren't emojis supposed to solve all that, though, right? Because, you know, they were going to get across your emotions and your nuance and other non-visual cues that you might get from voice or body positioning when you're sending a message.
You're thinking of GIFs and animated GIFs and memes, not emoji?
Memes, that's it. memes, that'll do it.
Right.
mood.
I honestly hadn't also appreciated the scale at which these are being used. You know, it talks here about the numbers of voice messages sent in this format.
Yeah, 200 million.
There's very different, a very definite age group that is highlighted in the story. Sort of mid early 20s kind of age group seems to be the one that is most often mentioned or interviewed or, you know, quotes come from. I think it's really interesting to see that how that's being used. It's not something, as I say, that I've connected with very much. I'm heavily invested in text writing and reading, but at the same time, I know that different age groups and also different cultures and different different geographical regions of the world prefer video content or prefer something to be described to them instead of reading a textual description of something. And for me, that's not how I prefer to work. There's some technical tutorials at the moment that are only available to me as videos, and I'm kind of frustrated by that because I would rather follow it through on a web page as text. But that's not the way it's been shared. Never mind.
Well, it's consumption models. You know, and what strikes me here is that if we have a preferred consumption model, like so Andy, instead of the video, you'd rather have text. Or for me, I wouldn't want, because this harkens back to the time when I was working in a company that was extraordinarily heavily voicemail dependent. Like I would get 20 minutes of voicemail.
Yeah.
And on page 14 of the charts, I'd like you to move this from here to there, right? And you had to listen to the whole thing. For me, this is an opportunity for speech to text for my consumption model, because my speed and the friction of dealing with text versus listening to something in real time or sped is tricky.
Well, on that note, I think we should thank our listeners for listening to the whole thing.
We are going to do a transcript, though.
Well, we'll do some show notes as a minimum. Yes. Yeah.
We try to help with that.
Do come and check us out. Check those out on gamesatwork.biz or follow the tweet that we'll be posting when the show goes live on your favorite podcatcher. There'll be a tweet with a link to our show notes. You can come check out. Go follow some of the links if there's anything you're interested in. And tweet back at us. Tell us what you thought. And send us your links for next week. We're really looking forward to it.
Absolutely agree.
See you next time, everybody.
See ya.
See ya. You've been listening to GamesAtWork.biz, the podcast about gaming, technology, and play. We are part of the Blueberry Podcasting Network, and would like to thank the band Random Encounters for their song, Big Blue. You can follow us on Twitter at GamesAtWork_biz or at our website at GamesAtWork.biz. This is episode 359. Speak, friend, and enter. This is episode 359. Speak, friend, and enter.